tonight's session will be tonight's session, mid-year modifications to your classroom to enhance student success, will be presented by Karen Kruger. Karen Kruger, MS, ICP school-based mentor, received her master's degree from Bay Street and has taught in elementary and middle schools from kindergarten through eighth grade. Currently, she works with New York City middle school teachers and administrators to support their Schools Attuned programs and mentors ICP coaches in Hidden Spark Schools. Karen has been a Schools Attuned facilitator since 2003, teaching all courses offered by All Kinds of Minds, developing curricula for workshops, mentoring and supervising teachers in K through 12th grade, leading faculty development workshops for New York City schools, and observing students. Welcome, Karen. I also want to acknowledge Betsy, who is our technical facilitator, who makes all this run very smoothly for all of us. Karen, we're very excited. Can't wait to hear your presentation. So, Karen, please take it away.
Oh, great. Thank you. Thank you so much. And thank you and welcome to everyone who is joining us here. And I wanted to start out by saying that this will be my third webinar, but my first one with this new format. And so if you're typing in questions in the chat room and you don't think I see them, I think Judith will be watching those and letting me be aware if I'm too caught up in my presentation. So I'm sort of apologizing in advance. All right, here we go. Overview of the session. I hope everyone is there. I'm very pleased to be doing this webinar. And when I was a teacher, I always viewed January. I know we're still in December, but I always viewed January as sort of a clean slate month. With approximately one half of the school year finished, it seemed like a good time to reflect on what was working and what wasn't, and how I could make changes to improve the second half of my student school year. And while I've done this workshop in some schools in the beginning of the year, how to set up your classroom for student success, someone suggested, well, how about doing it mid-year, because that might be a time when people are starting to really know their students and recognizing what they need, and you know, it might be an appropriate time. And then I recalled back of my clean slate month of January when I felt like I could kind of start over, and so that's how this came to be. And during this session, we're going to be using a developmental lens to consider how to modify a classroom to enhance student success. And we'll look at the demands that are involved with classroom configuration and discuss how to accommodate diverse learners. Okay, next slide, please. The goals for this session will be, first one, to understand how a classroom can physically affect learning, to become more aware of the learning pathways that are involved with your classroom environment, and to develop strategies for students who struggle in those learning pathways. So three goals. Next slide, please. I want to begin all of this by asking you, and I know you're muted, but I want you to be thinking about this. What is student success? Here are some images here from clip art, I guess, of what some student success might look like. And let's see, we have a teacher who looks like she's smiling in front of the classroom, and it's perhaps because that student is raising his or her hand to answer a question. And then there's a child who is coloring with a big smile, and there's another one in the center with her hand raised and someone looking at the globe. And, you know, these might be some ideas of what it looks like. It might look like some glimpses of what success might look like. But next slide, please, Betsy. But I want you to think about your classroom. And before we begin discussing how and why to modify your classroom, let's brainstorm what it looks like when students are successful in your classroom. So I'd like you to picture in your head, your ideal, and I'm doing kind of air quotations, successful classroom, what does it look like? What are the children doing? What are your students doing? How are the desks and tables arranged? What is on the walls? And what is the environment like in your classroom? Okay.
We have a couple of comments actually from your previous question on the last slide, Karen.
Oh, good. Okay.
Miriam Sarah Barlow Rosenblum, she commented interest, and I think this was what does success look like for you?
Yes. Yes. Okay. Great.
And learning accomplished.
Ah, good. And I think we have that next slide up. And when I said this is what I've heard, and this is from either having, you know, posed that question with teachers or doing this workshop, and some of the feedback is that, and perhaps these are some of the successful things that you have, that you would envision in your classroom, a quiet, orderly environment, everyone's working, students are following rules, students are happy, there are enthusiastic students who are excited to learn, high test scores, everyone always includes that. One small comment on that, you can't really maybe envision high test scores except what it looks like, you know, when you get the results as a teacher. But I know it's considered an outcome of students being, you know, academically successful, so I include that. Students who are kind to each other and a supportive atmosphere. Now, can we use the chat room? Have I left anything out, first of all? And I'd love to see your comments or additional things that will describe how you define success.
Well, we have one comment already, animated in topic discussion.
Ah, good.
I'm assuming
yes.
Students are animated, I'm assuming.
Right. Yeah, that's important. And I was trying to remember... There's a phrase of that, you know, buzz of kind of excited learning conversations that you can hear sometimes when you walk in a room. And it isn't, you know, students that are just chatting with each other or, you know, socializing, but it's when they're excitedly discussing what they're doing or what they're learning or whatever it is, if they're in small groups, what they're supposed to be doing. And it's usually palpable. But anyway, so here are some things that a successful classroom might have. Next slide, please. Okay, I think that's, is that 10, Betsy? Slide 10? Oh, great, thank you. Okay, what is necessary for students? And so thinking of those elements maybe of success, and I'm kind of grouping them together here, you know, such as to be, you know, quietly working and on task, to be kind to each other and friendly, supportive of one another and excited to learn, to maintain a neat, orderly, organized classroom. What is needed in order to have these results? Next slide, please. And so we're going to begin by considering the most dominant learning pathways that are involved with those elements of student success in your classroom. So which of the learning pathways are most involved? And by the way, I'll be using this phrase, either learning pathways, I probably won't be saying so much developmental constructs, but I might say that as well, and it's really referring to the same things, which we'll see on the next slide, please. These eight pathways of learning, some of you might recognize this from Mel Levine's work and Schools Attuned or also All Kinds of Minds, but these are eight pathways of learning or neural developmental constructs that most educators recognize as, you know, common ways that we learn. We use our memory. There's always attention involved in language and spatial ordering and temporal sequential ordering, higher order thinking, neuromotor function, and social cognition. And these are all you know, widely acceptable general pathways of learning. But if you were to choose four of these eight, so we're going to kind of try to narrow it down to half, as the most dominant as far as affecting your physical classroom, which would you include? And there can always be a tendency to say that everything, I call this everything is everything, where people sometimes say, well, all the constructs are always involved in everything. And while there is, you know, probably great reasons to argue for that, for the sake of one, we only have a short amount of time to discuss this, but there really are, I think, some prominent pathways that will affect how you are physically modifying your classroom to have more success with your students. So let's go to the next slide, please.
So you have one vote for attention.
Oh, good. One vote for attention. Okay. Oh, sorry. Now you have my self-selected answers on the next slide. And you know, attention. Absolutely, attention is involved. Now I see spatial ordering, neuromotor function, social cognition, attention. And we probably could get everyone to, you know, name all eight, but I'm going to be focusing on these four as the most dominant pathways, and those are spatial ordering, temporal sequential ordering, language, and social cognition. And as we're going through this, and you know, certainly you can type in the chat room, you know, if you have questions or maybe if you really are doubting these, if you wait until I explain a little bit about you know, how it can affect the classroom, it might make more sense. So please be patient. Okay, let's go to the next slide. How does spatial ordering affect the classroom? Spatial ordering involves things like how the desks and tables are arranged, how students manage their personal belongings, you know, and their lockers or their cubbies, if they have storage underneath their chairs or their desks, also how they handle things like their homework or their planners. It affects where the classroom supplies are located. You know, where do you keep your paper and art supplies or dictionaries, pencils, writing equipment? And it's all physical uses of the classroom, the walls, the floor, the ceiling. So all spatial ordering will be affecting all these different areas. Okay, next slide, please. Now, students who struggle with spatial ordering, they sometimes might have messy desks or lockers, or backpacks, or all three. They are sometimes the students who lose their homework who say, I did my homework and I can't find it. They might be the ones that have trouble with finding their pencils and papers, anything that they need to complete a task. They might have difficulty with graphs and maps. They might struggle where materials are located in the classroom. Now, I want to try this. Raise your hand if a student has come to your mind by just those descriptions of students who struggle with spatial ordering, if maybe one student or perhaps several have come to your mind who you think might be struggling with spatial ordering. I'm just curious if anyone recognizes. Oh, okay. Oh, that's neat. I've never seen the hand thing before. Okay, great. Oh, there's some more hands. Now, I personally struggle quite a bit with materials management. Some of you who know me know this. And I was that student that, you know, had a very messy desk and locker. We didn't have backpacks, but I know I was annoying and frustrating to my teachers, but I also know that it is not deliberate and it really is, you know, it's as much as of a difficulty as it is with children who struggle with receptive language, that you can't just, you know, kind of snap out of it or anything. It takes lots of good strategies and the patience to try them, but also to come up with alternatives when suggested ones don't work so well. Okay, so that's what it might look like for students who struggle with spatial ordering. Could we go to the next slide, please? And and we'll look at how temporal sequential ordering affects the classroom. And temporal sequential ordering involves anything with time and sequences. So posted schedules or classroom routines, clocks, timers, alphabets, number lines, outlines or homework assignments, anything where there are, directions and expectations, how children are, or students are supposed to be prepared for each of your classes. Some teachers will have, specific routines that when you come through my classroom door, the first thing you do is go quietly to your desk, put your things down, then turn in your homework and get out your, writing journals and do the do now that's up on the board, three steps or something like that. But those kinds of sequences that many people take for granted can be very challenging for some students. And, in fact, if we go to the next slide, we can see some examples of students who struggle with temporal sequential ordering might have difficulty turning in homework on time, struggle with following sequences and schedules. They might have trouble with long-term assignments. They might have difficulty estimating time or understanding time. They might struggle to get to school on time and to get to their classes on time. And I want to try another hand raise.
Karen,
raise your hand.
Karen, can I just, before you ask the hand raising,
yes.
Hannah Miara has asked, would this also be transitioning? Would someone with temporal sequential ordering struggle with transitioning?
Oh, yes, absolutely. And, in fact, I know that there was a wonderful webinar by
Andrea.
Yes, Andrea Russo. And if you haven't heard it and seen the slides, it's archived. But absolutely, they are the ones that will have trouble with transitions too. Let's see here. But could people raise your hand if you can picture a student or students that you think might be struggling with temporal sequential ordering based on some of these descriptions of what it might look like? Okay. Great. Some hand raised. Okay, good, because these are students, too. We will be getting to strategies, and some of these might be some of the strategies might be appropriate for those kids that you're thinking of. Okay, next slide, please. And this is language. How does language affect the classroom? Well, language involves every kind of communication, from the daily schedules to your posted directions for written assignments, explanations of homework, the expectations, the actual homework assignments, your spoken instructions, classroom procedures, class discussions, anything that involves communicating with written or spoken language is going to be involved. And I do lots of observations in classrooms in many different schools, and I'm always interested to see the teacher's expectations, if they're posted, but where they're posted, and how I have noticed how some teachers who will understand with children with receptive language problems sometimes need, they need multiple postings of these kinds of communications, and if you combine that with, temporal sequential struggles as well, I've seen where they've had the daily schedule posted, in the front of the room and maybe on the door, too, if the door is not at the front of the classroom, and then also on a student's desk, and then maybe on the student's notebook. I've seen students who have laminated cards, of the different schedules that teachers have given to them to hold in their hand, so that when they're transitioning to different classes, that, they know where to go, because they can't hold on to that information, or they don't, have the, if it's a, might be a memory struggle too, but, to be able to retain that, oh gosh, after math, every single Tuesday and Thursday, we go to gym, and they don't remember that. But anyway, this is a language. Now, next slide, please, Betsy. Students who struggle with language might be the ones who ask for the verbal directions to be repeated and look confused when verbal instructions are given. They might have difficulty reading the posted schedules. They may appear reluctant to participate in the class discussions. They may have trouble completing the writing assignments. And this is always a red flag. If you see a real disparity between the spoken output and the written output, a child who is very eloquent or very articulate, big vocabulary, and then when they write, it seems like it's, you know, someone with very different language skills because their sentences are so simple and the thoughts are not, they don't match how they, you know, how they speak when they're contributing in discussions. That's usually a big indicator that there is, you know, a definite struggle with language. Now, I just want to see. And again, can you picture or do any students come to mind that perhaps you hadn't thought of before that, oh, my gosh, I wonder if it's a language struggle because they're, why do I always, I thought it was a memory thing because they keep asking for everything to be repeated. And it, what might appear as a short-term memory struggle, it could be language. It could be a combination of the two. But anyway, it's something to think about. And again, oh, I'm seeing some hands. Good. Okay, next slide, please. How does social cognition affect the classroom? And this was the fourth one of the dominant pathways that was on my list. Social cognition will involve things like small group work, how the desks are arranged, your expectations for student behavior in your classroom, how conflicts are resolved in your classroom, and classroom rules and procedures. Next slide, please. Students who struggle with social cognition might have trouble making and keeping friends. They also might appear awkward in social situations. They may be the students who have trouble working with peers in small groups, or they might be the ones that have difficulty resolving conflicts with other students. The ones who seem to be unable to work with a partner. I was recently asked to observe a student, or I think it was a couple students, and the teacher described them as unable, you know, to work with other students. They just couldn't do it. They just, you know, for whatever reason, she wasn't sure. And it was very interesting to watch because they did seem to do much better on their own. And sometimes you make the decision, you know, as the adult in charge that it's better for the rest of the class or it's better for that student. It's better to actually get things done because it can seem to take so much time to handle the conflicts that might come up when, you know, a student who has difficulty interacting with his peers or her peers has to work with them. And yet, sometimes it is important and worth the time and effort to really help guide, you know, a student who struggles with social cognition to learn how to do this, even though it can seem painfully, the progress might seem painfully slow and it can be pretty arduous, but these children who struggle with social cognition, and a lot of times they don't have friends and they don't really know how to, you know, approach other children, it is something to be very concerned about because it's such an important part. Of childhood certainly, but and socialization, but you only need one friend, but it's important to have at least one. And recently, with my work in some of these New York City middle schools, I've been asked more and more to observe students who are really having some serious struggles with social cognition and you know being able to solve problems, you know do to conflict resolution with peers and sometimes with adults as well. And it just seems like something that has been, I would say, almost a growing concern in some ways. But it is important. Okay, sorry. Raise your hand, please, if some of these examples describe a student who struggles in one of these ways in your class. Okay, good. I saw a comment. I'm reading a comment, too, in the chat room. Oh, my goodness. This is, excuse me, seeing a lot of hands. And that Miriam wrote that social cognition struggles are even in strong academic students. And that's very true. And sometimes, you know, students who are very strong academically and that is their focus and that is their concern, and they might not seem to care if they don't have friends. You know, it depends. I think it depends so much on the age, but friendships are usually very important. They're of the utmost importance in adolescence, and when your peers' opinions, you know, mean everything more than the adults in your life a lot of times, and I think that's when it can become striking. But students who do have great strengths academically and yet struggle socially can sometimes have a facade of, you know, great intelligence and a bravado, and yet they also can be very lonely and sad. And so, the other point, and many of you might have heard this before, but a lot of times with social cognition, where these things, these events or incidences play out are usually not in the classroom, as far as the kind of high stakes experiences that can affect children so strongly. They usually occur either out at recess or maybe at lunchtime or on the sidewalk or in the hallway, and there might not be, you know, adults around to witness it or hear what is said when, you know, some of the kids can be very, very hurtful verbally and also skilled at not, you know, being careful to not say things when there are adults around. And so you'll hear of these things happening, or you'll have the children that come in from recess who are crying or very upset because of, you know, what was said or done during recess, and, you know, there wasn't no one really witnessed the exchange, and yet it can be, you know, very important things. And I'm not going to go into, you know, what happens with all the internet socialization, but I know it is of concern to many schools and many middle school teachers too, because of the access that some students have to technology and the kind of cyberbullying, I guess is what they're calling it, that can happen outside of school too. You know, it has nothing to do with during school hours. But anyway, just something to think about. We're talking about modifying our classroom, so I'll stick to that. Okay, next slide, please.
Before we go on, just Miriam also commented that, you know, this struggle in social cognition can be seen in middle school group work projects.
Oh,
where
yes.
Students are finding that a struggle to work together on a...
Oh, absolutely. And I've watched in classrooms where, you know, kids will say, I don't want to work with him, or, you know, I don't want to work with her, I can't with her, she doesn't do the work, or she won't help. And you know, which those comments alone can be hurtful, but it's extra difficult when they're true. And but we'll be getting to that too with strategies that will be, you know, addressing, hopefully addressing perhaps some of these issues. So what can we do to help these students? There are many ways we can support the students in our classrooms who struggle in these areas. So we're going to get to the strategies, and we'll look at some that are specifically targeted for these four learning pathways of spatial ordering, temporal sequential ordering, language, and social cognition. Okay, next slide, please. All right. These are strategies for students who struggle with spatial ordering. And again, spatial ordering was, you know, with things with materials management, with how the desks are, you know, how homework is handled, et cetera. So this first one is to designate specific labeled areas for homework collection, for storage of subject materials, you know, for writing, for math, et cetera, and students' personal belongings. And I've seen all kinds of collection, you know, baskets and trays and folders and bins that are labeled, and some are labeled, you know, on the actual containers. Some are labeled on the walls, you know, above or below the containers, where, you know, it's very clear where things are supposed to go. Let's see. Another one is provide students with the practice of previewing a task and making a list of the materials needed, and then collecting and organizing materials and their workspace before beginning work. This technique can be applied to preparing for homework before leaving school and to homework completion at home. So you could ask, and I think I would maybe even do this with the whole class, you know, okay, we're going to be doing book reports. What are you going to need, depending on what kind of book report you're asking? You know, what are you going to need to do this assignment? Well, you're going to need the book. And I have, you know, and I'm sure this has happened to all of you out there. We probably could say, raise your hands. This has happened where the student will say, I'm going to do my book report, but I've lost the book. You know, or I lost the directions, or I lost whatever. They're missing something to do one of the most basic pieces to do the task at hand. But kind of previewing this, especially if you're assigning things that are going to be done at home, what are you going to need? You know, where will you be working? And you might do this with the whole class. You might target it for the students who you know are the ones that really struggle with managing their materials. But it's a great thing to do, by the way, of just getting kids to preview what they're going to need and how they're going to do it, if they can even, you know, if they will articulate that or be able to think about it before they just rush out of the classroom to go home. Okay, provide a consistent format for presenting visual information on the smart board, on a smart board, on blackboard, on overheads or other printed materials. And again, I've seen, you know, in different classrooms, depending on the technology and things that they have, The smart boards are absolutely amazing, and I've never actually used one. I've seen them and seen some very skilled teachers use them very effectively. But I think they can also be overwhelming. Sometimes, you know, if they have like a video going on and then they have the homework or they have problems or something, you know, on a different side, and there's a lot to look at. And I think if you do use a lot of technology, if things are pretty predictable, at least, like where the students know to find the information that they need, that if you do all your presentations using smart boards or PowerPoints or something like that, that you always have a pattern of where the important information is going to be, so that there's not like a search every time. I hope that makes sense. Feel free to type in the chat room if you want more elaboration on that. I mean, just was glancing here.
We have a note, yes, from Rivka suggesting that, you know, students have their homework folders with two pockets, one on the left, one on the right, and one side is designated for homework that they have to do, and the other is homework that they've completed, I believe. And, yes. And then they have a certain place in the classroom to put their homework folders when they come in.
Yes. Yeah. Many teachers have great strengths with spatial ordering and have, you know, beautifully set up classrooms where, you know, everything is where it's supposed to be. And even if it gets very messy while the students are there, by the end of the day or after they've left, it's back to being very organized. And I have seen other classrooms where it's less so, and I've seen other teachers who I think struggle in similar ways that I did, and I still do, but I did in my classroom as well, with materials management. And one helpful thing, by the way, if you do, if it's not a strength of yours, but you can identify students who are very good at this, is to have them help out. I was in a classroom recently where there was a student who struggles academically, but he was so organized and so neat. I mean, his locker, I'm trying to think if he was middle school. I don't think so. I think he was an elementary student. But his locker, you know, the books were in this beautiful order based on size. And he was putting things into his backpack. And his backpack, you know, things were meticulous and neat. And there was it looked, you know, so clean and orderly. And I envied his mother, but also I wish I had those skills. But I told the teacher, I don't think I was even observing that student necessarily. No, I was. That was one of the students I was observing. But and again, he had other very strong academic struggles. But I said, you know, he could really help out with some of the children in the classroom who clearly have materials management issues, because you know, where all their stuff is falling off their desk or off their chairs, and you know, you look at their lockers and everything's falling out of it. And I thought, gosh, it's great when someone who struggles academically has something to offer that nobody or very few people in the class do, or they didn't have that apparent strength. And the teacher was very excited actually about trying that out, because she thought that would be a great confidence booster for him too, but that he could share some of his tips, how he's able to do it. So anyway, that's something to think about too. And I wanted to just
can we follow up on? I'm sorry, Karen, to interrupt.
Oh, sure.
Miriam has offered sort of an extension of Rivka's suggestion around the folder usage. Is that in her classroom she assigns specific colors for each topic, and each topic is a specific color, and all of the students would have, if the topic were math, let's say, all of them would have the same color folder for math and a different color folder for English.
Yeah.
And that can be helpful for telling them what to retrieve, when which folder they need can be done by telling them the color.
That is a great idea, too, because sometimes for the students that have trouble with sequences, too, you know, where everybody's three steps ahead of them, if they can glance around and see, oh, gosh, they've all got the green folder out. Okay, I better find my green folder. You know, that's easier to identify than, oh, my goodness, what subject is this? Or you know, if they have textbooks opened where it's hard to see where everybody is, you know, that folder is a great indicator. I like that idea. Okay, love, next slide, please. And let's see, this is... I want to make sure I got this one. Okay. The strategies for students who struggle with temporal sequential ordering. Post the daily routine in several places. Perhaps, I think I shared this before, but perhaps on the student's desk or notebook in addition to a classroom wall, and maybe the front of the classroom, you know, the front board and the door, and, you know, sometimes they just need it in several places to be able to help. If you have trouble with sequencing and transitions are difficult, it's helpful to have several places to know where this information will be. Preview sequences and alert students to sequences. I work with an eighth grade CTT class in a New York City middle school, and the other day I've been teaching them about these different constructs, and these students have... Last year they taught, it's a large middle school, and they taught 75 teachers about memory and attention and, memory and attention, and part of language. And I was teaching them about temporal sequential ordering and did this activity of having them think of just first of all the sequences involved from the moment they are conscious in the morning until they get to school. And it was fascinating to see, you know, the ones that kind of said, there were some that just said, well, I wake up and then, you know, I wake up and I brush my teeth and then I get to school, you know, and that, to them, that was the sequence. And then there were some who were so detailed. This one girl wrote 18 things that she did, and she said, I haven't even left my house yet. And she loves sequences, and she loves, you know, well, first I do this, and this is how I turn off my alarm clock, and then I sleep for 5 more minutes, and then I press, you know, the snooze button again, and then my mother wakes me up, and then I feed the cat, and then I, you know, but she knew exactly what she did first, second, third, et cetera. And anyway, it was an interesting activity because they, by the end of the period, these eighth graders were far more aware of what sequences are and how many are involved in, you know, a typical school day of their lives. And if you think of your students, just the sequences of getting the sequences involved in getting them to school and then, you know, going through a very long school day perhaps, you know, it can be overwhelming for someone who struggles with these things. So it's good to even have those conversations about, you know, here's another sequence coming up because we're going to be doing, practice for the assembly. And so we're going to be lining up, and then we're going to the auditorium, and then we're going to sit down, and then we're going to listen to the speaker and, you know, and talking about step one, step two, step three. Clocks and timers are wonderful to help students manage their time. Ask students to estimate how long tasks will take. How long does it take you to write a paragraph? Estimate. You know, some students might say, oh, it only takes 5 minutes, and some might say, it takes me an hour to write a paragraph. And they might not really have any idea, one, how long it takes, but two, what that sense of time is. And it's great to have them have a sense of it, because if you're going to have to write a 6-page report over the weekend, and you think it takes you 5 minutes to write a paragraph, and you think that there's only 2 paragraphs on one page, you know, you might estimate that you can do this 6-page report in a half hour or something, and it's not going to be realistic. It's not so much to, you know, have them time themselves and worry about rushing through things, but more to have, excuse me, for students who seem to not have a sense of how long things will take. And, you know, if you divide long-term assignments into manageable chunks, you know, for them to understand that, you know, with this long assignment and these different chunks, this is what you do first, you know, this is what you'll do second, and to be able to check in with them and, you know, make sure that they can follow along. Use acronyms. COPS. I'm sure many of you know these, for proofreading, which is, you know, capitalize, organization, punctuation, spelling, DMSD, for long division, for the sequence, for the steps, you know, dad, mom, sister, brother, divide, multiply, subtract, bring down, fact. Now this one, I didn't know, which, you know, for self-monitoring, for active listening, I thought this was an interesting one, focus attention, ask yourself questions, connect ideas, try to picture important ideas. You know, there's another one that I saw in a school for all learning disabled kids, and it was on every classroom, and it was the word slant, S-L-A-N-T. And I didn't know what that meant. You know, I just saw slant. You know, it was S period, L period, A period. And then finally, one of the teachers, I was following some middle school students, and they said, you know, will everyone please just slant here? And I think they saw me looking quizzical, so someone said, it's sit up, lean forward, that's L, act interested, which I thought was very interesting, at least act interested, nod occasionally, yes, and then track the teacher with your eyes. So anyway, that was an expectation that was in every single classroom of the school, and the students, when the teachers would write it on the board without saying anything, they all did seem to kind of sit up, lean forward, and, you know, do the rest of it. Okay, next slide, please.
One more comment on time awareness from Miriam is that she sees this as a big struggle for middle schoolers who have compartmentalized learning, and they may have several teachers and several different subjects. And that time management piece might be compounded, I guess, by
all the teachers. Yes, absolutely. And, you know, and I think time awareness, yeah, and I see that, you know, it's a big struggle, and I think it's definitely worth talking about, you know, with the students, and even saying, you know, I've noticed that people are having great difficulty in getting things done on time in this class, turning in assignments, or where you're supposed to be in this long-term project, and discuss, you know, with the class about how people struggle with this, and maybe have the ones who don't struggle talk about strategies that they use. Depending on the age group with which you work, I used to find as a middle school teacher that a lot of times the students tended to listen to each other. You know, I could be saying the exact same strategies and there would be no reaction, but if another student said it, you know, to the class or something, then everyone, you know, suddenly it was such a great idea and they were willing to try it. So it might be that you just need, you know, a paraphraser or, you know, a student messenger. I don't know. But I think it's a great thing to raise the awareness how this can be difficult and also how some students have strengths in this and if they can share, you know, what they do, it can be helpful. Okay, next slide. Oh, great, we're here for the language. Thank you, Betsy. These are strategies for students who struggle with language. Make sure that verbal directions are repeated. I just talked about paraphrasers for giving strategies, but use student paraphrasers or provide written directions in multiple locations. And I've seen this used very successfully, these paraphrasers, and sometimes they are the students who might even have, you know, expressive language struggles, and if the teacher tells them in advance, you know, privately, gosh, I'd like you to be the paraphraser, maybe just for today. And so when I give directions, I want you to repeat what I say to the class because they're going to listen to you. You know, they might listen to you more than they'll even listen to me. So I'll give you a heads up that when I'm going to give a direction and then I'm going to ask for the paraphraser to repeat it, you know, and make sure the student is comfortable doing it. But it can be a great intervention for some students that have, that might be the ones, too, that are timid or shy about speaking, and it's a kind of a safe way to say a limited amount but still have their voice heard, and great for students to, you know, learn to listen to other people giving information. For younger students, provide visuals to accompany written instructions. Provide advance warning before calling on students. Check for understanding. You know, what did I say? You know, can someone repeat what I said? Did everyone hear what was just instructed? I've seen teachers who will, you know, kind of stop in the middle and say, okay, how's everybody doing? Because I've been talking a lot. I should be doing that right now. How's everybody doing? And, you know, checking in and making sure that it hasn't been, you know, just lots and lots and lots of language without checking in to see if children are still following and still with you. Post punctuation rules, writing procedures, editing examples, provide checklists and rubrics for students to follow, and consider posting examples of these checklists and rubrics on walls. And, you know, and I've seen all kinds of different posters with all, you know, with editing examples. I've seen wonderful ones and some not so great. And I'm talking about these are ones that, you know, people buy at probably teacher supplies stores. And when there's, and, you know, it depends on your own taste. It depends on you know, how you like the walls and things to look in your classroom. But some of these can be overwhelming with language, and yet I've seen some that are done simply and beautifully, and they are a very easy on the eyes, but also communicated very well, you know, with very specific examples. It's right there, and I should find out who actually produces those things and provide that excuse me as a strategy as well, but Let's see here. Next slide, please, because I want to get to social cognition strategies for the students who struggle. Carefully consider the groupings and pairings of students to maximize social strengths and weaknesses. When you have, you know, the child who is one so strong socially and is friendly and is able to work with everyone, you know, those students are frequently agreeable to help work with the child that everybody else doesn't want to work with. But do think about how you're arranging desks. And I've seen, you know, when teachers will change, you know, the rooms and or the way that tables are arranged, you know, because of some social problems sometimes, and then only to find that they've put students together that they didn't realize had, you know, some major issues that were happening outside of the classroom. And, you know, and once again, they were back at the drawing board trying to, you know, rearrange the class yet again because of the problems that were caused. Post clear classroom rules that are created by the students and clear consequences for when the rules are broken. And I just wanted to say, consider starting over in January with new rules. If the rules that you started with are not working, I've shared this with lots of teachers, but in one particular challenging year with my eighth graders, I came in January after the break and very purposely ripped my classroom rules off the wall and tore it up in front of the class into little pieces. And it definitely got their attention, and they were quite shocked. And I said, you know, I've been thinking about these do not work. They stopped working a long time ago, and I'm not starting this year, you know, pointing to the same rules that weren't working, and we're starting over here. And this time, too, before I didn't post consequences, and I did, because I think it's very helpful to have that, especially with middle school kids, for them to see what's going to happen if you break the rules. And the consequences have to be consistent, and they have to be reasonable, and they have to be very clearly communicated. But I found that very helpful, and people might be posting things in the chat room too. But let me just get through these, and then we can talk a bit about that. Post clear expectations of small group work too. The roles of the group members, the expected behaviors, the accountability and consequences of behaviors. Sometimes when small groups don't work, it's because people don't know what they're supposed to do. And sometimes, you know, I know sometimes teachers will say, well, I've made this very clear. I did from the beginning of the year. They all know this. This is how we work together. But some students cannot remember what they're supposed to do or how they're supposed to work together. And it really does help to have these things posted. And you can refer to them, you know, by pointing to it. Also using role plays to help students understand acceptable ways of resolving conflicts. Oh, my goodness, I see. Next slide, please. I know I'm running a little over. But some final thoughts. Now that we've considered how the classrooms can affect student success, think about how you might change some aspect of your classroom. What can you do to improve student success with spatial ordering concerns? How might you change the way you handle sequences and assignment deadlines with your students? Think of the ways you communicate your routines, your expectations, and your rules. How might you improve these communications? Those are just some final thoughts. Next slide, please. Thank you so much for participating in this webinar, and I hope this presentation provided you with some new ideas about how to modify your classroom and perhaps some strategies you might try tomorrow to enhance student success. So thanks very much.
Thank you, Karen. I'm really excited to share these with colleagues and other people that I work with. These are great strategies and great strategies to kind of even just whet appetites to think of more strategies. So thank you for such a thoughtful and helpful presentation.
Oh, you're welcome.